Hey, Pops, I just happened to be looking here at Volume 2 of Satchmo at Symphony Hall in Boston. You know, that concert we played?
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of mad jive on here, you know, about old Big Sid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, boy. And it got a real fine story, you know.
You like this chair? It's down
the Well, either way, it's good.
Yeah?
Okay. Pardon me.
Okay. Wait now. Wait.
Yeah, it's, you know, it says, like at the top of it, it says Satchmo at Symphony Hall. Louis Armstrong and the All-Stars featuring Louis Armstrong, Jack Teagarden, Barnaby Guard, Dick Carey, Big Sid, Catlett, Arvell Shaw, and Valma Middleton. It's real kicks. And it, you know, this guy that wrote it, it seems like he was just in our midst, you know, and wrote about us just as things were really happening, you know? And it said, starts off by saying, it was early winter, a quiet Sunday evening in Boston. Strollers on the broad sidewalks of Massachusetts Avenue paused to wonder at the hubdub under the marquee and in the foyer of the famous old concert auditorium, home of the Boston Orchestra and the Pops concerts. The audience gathered there and slowly filing into the hall couldn't possibly be coming to hear a jazz concert. You know, that's a symphonic hall.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no loud laughter here, no jitterbug antics, and the only sound to rise above the murmur of subdued conversation is a monologue in low register from the direction of the box office window where white-haired Mr. Spaulding, a familiar face to Boston music lovers of three generations, is saying, sorry, nothing at all, sorry, no seats, sorry, no seats on stage tonight, sorry, everything gone since Thursday, sorry. Beside the window is a poster with the billing for tonight's recital. It reads, by arrangement with Joe Glazier, Louis Armstrong and his concert group, featuring Jack Teagarden, Sidney, Barney, Dick, Arvell, and Valma. So it is yes, this is a jazz concert in the classic meaning of the term that this serious audience had come to hear tonight. Since the early 30s, Bostonians have been seeing Lou in his various big orchestras and theaters and dance halls. And now here he is again, this time with the same species of small jazz ensemble that first brought him international attention as a famous creative musician two decades ago. Decades ago.
Right.
What has happened to Louis? Yeah.
Watch your language.
Decades. Well, I was carried away with that Boston atmosphere. So can his jazz talents have a trope while he stood in front of those dance hall orchestras? That must be the question in the mind of this audience tonight. A scholarly audience with many students and musicians. And if an occasional gray thatch is an indication, here and there, professor as well. They are full of respect for this hall and for America's great musician, Louis Armstrong. And as they quietly pass the ticket taker, they smile for the music they have come to hear tonight. The atmosphere at the side street stage entrance is not so decorous. The elderly little man who usually dozes there, sitting in a wooden chair just inside the door, is completely awake for the first time in years. The second line, an intense, nervous group, is assembled on the pavement outside like a band of gorillas. And man, here comes our boy, Big Sid Catlett. So he pushes through the hatless collector's arm with rate discs for the master signature and goes through the stage entrance, pressured by a wake of assistants, each bearing one sock cymbal, one tom-tom, one snare drum, and so forth. You know, those cats care that to get in, you know. So the long corridor behind the stage and the foyer zone each side of it is crowded with musicians who know the entrances and exits of this old hall as they know their scales. There are no reservations about Louis Jazz in this boisterous laughing mob. Obviously, they look forward to joyous evening of musical excitement. Dick Carey is surrounded by the biggest cluster of these backstage musicians. He is encircled by old buddies who congratulate him on the talent and great fortune that has put him in Louis' company. And Dick is telling them of his adventures since Bobby Hackett sent him to play at Louis' first small band performance in years at Town Hall in New York. It was a result of this engagement that Jack Teagarden permanently disbanded his own orchestra and signed on with Louis. And Dick's intimate performance that night earned a permanent berth in a new orchestra for him as well. Now he was talking about the successes of the new band, Billy Birds in Hollywood and the Rag Doll in North Chicago. In the wing beside Dick, an electrician is tuning up a ton or more of delicate recording equipment brought up by truck from New York that morning. It is Pete Frucci, sound engineer, who first wired this great auditorium to record the performance of the Boston Orchestra. Buzzy Druden directs a small contentment of assistants setting up Sid's battery of drums. Sid stands away from this activity, discussing last night's Carnegie Hall appearance of the group with the writer George Frazier. That figure standing in the center of the great wooden stage, which more often accommodates a symphony orchestra and chorus than it does a six-piece jazz band. The audience has nearly filled the old-fashioned black leather and wood chairs on the gently sloping parquet, and the balcony which hangs on the three walls facing the stage is uncrowded with many of the younger set who sit on the steps of the aisle and stand in the shadows in the back of the boxes and in the area behind the highest rows of seats. Just off stage in the opposite wing is Frenchie, first bus driver, now tour manager for Louis there past 11 years. He clenches his black cigarette holder in his teeth intensively as he deals out an advance to Barney Bigard, who stands in an immaculate tuxedo and stiff shirt, quietly noddling on his Selma. Just beyond Barney's off his shelf, warming up on his bass, while Velma Middleton, all white silk and sequins, steals a peek through at the audience that fills the house. Orville, youngest member of the troupe, is Louis' special protege. Like Velma, he is from Louis' big band, and also like Velma, he's from St. Louis. Now, there's one special dressing room in Symphony Hall. Here it is, that the great virtuoso playing at the hall prepare for their performances, Toscanini and Iturbi. All have their way of approaching these occasions in this room, and Satchmo has his own way, too. It is a big room with a long table in the center, a piano in one corner, and a dressing table with an alcove of mirrors at one end. It is fortunate that it is a big room tonight, for it is filled with a laughing, noisy crowd. Sitting on the piano bench, oblivious to the commotion all around him, sits Jack Teagarden playing his trombone. Dolls. Melody in A. A snatch of some operatic air and a new original melody that we'll probably hear sometime tonight in the middle of one of his solos. At the opposite end of the room, that is the crowd, thickest in noises, and the hardest laughter he is Louis' own as he sits before his mirror in stiff shirt but still in his shorts with a neatly knotted white handkerchief capping his head. Every few minutes he reaches for his trumpet, which hangs above him in a sling, ingeniously contrived from a bent wire clothes hanger. You know how you do that part?
Yeah.
And then he plays briefly a few bars from the intermezzo of Cavalera Rusticana, a measure or two of Richard Rogers, That's For Me. He takes his trumpet from his lips, closely inspects his embouchure with a small hand mirror, and is off on another story. He is evidently in high spirits. He's happy with this little band. Around him sit close friends, some native Bostonians he has come to know well during many appearances in this city in years gone by. The waiter that took care of him on the diner this afternoon come up from New York, two trumpet players from the symphony who are curious about the mouthpieces made for him by a dedicated Pittsburgh artisan, a writer or two from the Boston Press, disc jockey Sharon Feller, and Joe Bushkin and June Clark, who have motored up from New York for this concert. Busy behind Lou is Doc Pugh, whose first function is companion, and whose second is dresser. Louis steps into his black trousers, slips into his dinner jacket, and applies a final touch of salve to his lips as he examines them very seriously in his hand mirror. Now French is pounding on the dressing room door. That's it, he shouts. The room is instantly silent. Louis takes the handkerchief from his head and hangs it carelessly on a peg to wear again when he comes off stage. In one hand is his glistening gold lacquer trumpet, and the other the stack of 40 freshly ironed white handkerchiefs and the transparent plastic mute that Jack Teagarden has made for him. He steps through the hushed dressing room congregation and walks to the wings where he stands in the darkness as the house lights comes down. This has been no instruction to the band. There is no fixed program beyond eight bars or when it's sleepy time down south. Louis has said that these are the moments when he thinks of his childhoods of New Orleans. Tonight with this orchestra, such memories must come easily, for he turns to the musicians standing in the darkness behind him and whispers, Mahogany Hall Stomp. They nod, as they will nod all evening when he turns during someone's solo and calls out softly, another title. The door opens and suddenly they're on the stage in the bright lights. Louis sets the tempo with the tap of his foot. Listen now to those wonderful moments of music and know what happened that November night. Isn't that beautiful? Ain't that beautiful?
Well, you see all that interests you.
Well, I looked and I noticed that they have a couple of numbers that I did that night.
Why don't you tell her
during the concert?
Tell her the name of the numbers, all the numbers that's on there.
Well, in volume two, they have I Cried For You by the All Stars and featuring Velma Middleton on vocals. And Since I Fell For You. And they also have Body and Soul by Barney Bigard and Muskrat Ramel. And on the other ones, they have Steak Face. That's where Big Sid takes a mad drum solo, you know?
Well, they got them listed on all.
Yeah.
Or put all the names down there.
And On the Sunny Side of the Street by Satchmo on vocals and trumpet. High Society, you know, with Barney and the instrumental.
Yeah.
And That's My Desire with Pops Tonight, with, you know. And they have a few more, you see.
Well, you see this picture right here.
Oh, that's great.
Put this whole thing in a frame, period.
It's beautiful, too.
And then the other side, see? Mm-hmm. I'll have a double frame, so when I have, you know, my pool table and my bass on the jar, you know.
Hey, stuff.
I have those. See, I have all the pictures around the wall, you know, mm-hmm. like when friends come to visit.
Yeah.
We sit around and listen to the radio. Oh, the cat want to shoot some pool. That's what, of course, I got to be an old man to even think about sitting around the house that long.
Yeah. Especially shooting pool, huh?
Yeah, sure. See, that's something. Imagine me shooting pool, man. I'd be like Bill Robinson, you know, Captain kept on jewelrying and, you know, messing with Bill, and he's been to make a very serious shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill is sensing, and then when he got ready to shoot, he wham, hit that guy right in the stomach. Well, Mama, I appreciate you reading this. You did a beautiful job.
Oh, thanks, Pops.
You think we shall play it back?
Well, we'll play some of it.
Let me get it right. I don't want to do a Lucille. She's talking about Walter Winchell, you know. And I better not tell it on this wheel.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Velma, Stuff, and Garden Means. This is really a pleasure for me to sit here and listen to those records from Town Hall. And of course, we all very sad about Big Sid. We understand that, you know. But I must say that this whole reel is dedicated to him, because Sid was with us when he made all these tunes. See? And I still think he's the greatest drummer ever picked up a Fast Sticks. And thousands, I'd say millions of people will agree with me. Even to listen to these records, the man was just a born genius. And it's too bad, probably like Big Sid, Fats Waller had to cut out, you know. Of course, we all got to cut out sometime. Our days are limited, we understand all that. Of course, we can do something about it, prevent it by taking care of our health a little better than some of the cats do, you know, physic every now and then or something. Of course, that's too late now. But anyway, Gordon, I know you know Big Sid. Say just a few words, because this reel is dedicated to him. And if I live 100 years, you'll hear the same reel about poor Sid.
Well, it sure is nice to hear a person dig up a storm and lay it down with an even beat, and I'll say that he's the smoothest man that I've ever heard lay it down.
Well, Garden, that coming from you, I know that, it was really great, because, you know, you're one of them skin beaters yourself, see? And you and I have so much fun sitting down sometime, just you and I backstage, digging that music from afar and those beats, you know. So I know that you really dug that wonderful beat that Big Sid used to put out. Man, and he used to catch me on every turn. I could change my routine every night, and he'd be right on me, you know. Never could lose him, see. He's a great guy. Hey, Stuff, where did you first meet Big Sid?
In Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And he always looked forward to seeing Stuff Crouch, you know, when he'd come down the alley, you know.
Yes, my boy.
He could play mad there, you know, a lot of territory for him to cover.
Yeah, he was the world's greatest drummer.
Fine.
And I'm very proud that I knew him.
Oh, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I'm going to record this album, and I'll keep it always.
That's right. Isn't it a great album?
It certainly is.
Oh, it's terrific, man. It was really a thrill, you know, when Pops brought it in tonight, and I dug it. You know, then when I got a chance to really come and dig it right away,
yes,
real great thrill.
It really was a thrill.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry that I wasn't able to benefit.
And I know Pops will keep this right on his tape all the time, you know. But I told, like, yeah.
I mean, the last time we saw Big Sid was in Boston,
it
too.
It certainly was, Pops.
How about that?
Yeah. It really was.
Big Sid came by the concert, you know, and told us where he was working. And after the concert, we went over to his place. And we had one wonderful time.
Oh,
looked like we just
time.
Did a whole show.
Really did.
An hour and a half. You know, Big Sid was MC, and you know how he'd kill everybody.
Oh, it was great, man, you know?
Yeah, and all the All-Stars, and Velma and I, we did our double and killed them.
Oh, it was kicks.
Cold outside. Oh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, another one.
That's the last time we saw Sid.
That's right.
Well, that's a coincidence.
Yeah.
It really was, right in Boston,
yeah.
At Pops That Number, Storyville.
Storyville.
Yeah, club.
This little kid, Wilbur, that plays so much soprano like Bessie. He and Sid was together out there with a shop band.
Mm-hmm,
and they spread a big dinner and everything for us.
Oh, I know. Your mother was really
great.
Pleasant.
Oh, it was
and
great.
So,
great.
You know, it was a shop. We were out in Eugene, and Sid were out East End, and things like that happened where we really couldn't do what we would like to have done for Sid, you know? We just, you know, just broke our hearts because we couldn't just be right there to do something right quick for him, you know?
Yeah.
That's how much we think of Sid, man.
I can understand that because all of Los Angeles was shocked and really hurt.
So. And man, none of us knew how to tell it to the other one, you know? And when Pops told me, he just kind of eased it on me, you know, and just walked away real quick, you know?
I did.
Oh, man, it was...
I said,
Velma,
Velma, brace yourself, you know? And I told about the just announcing over the radio about Big Sid just passed. And now I can look back, way back as far as 1922, you know, and through the years up to 1930. Well, especially back there, when I first come to Chicago, Big Sid was in short pants.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how long I've
they
been
used to laugh about that all the time because he was a big boy, huh?
Big kid and had on knee breeches, you know? So you know he was young.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
It breaks my heart to even to think about, you know, a young man. Gee. Just begin to live, you know.
That's right. Well, I never will forget the morning because it came on the news and Dotsie woke me up.
Oh, Dotsie, your wife?
Yeah, my wife, And then she called Zudy.
Your wife would
hear
that. Do you think you're talking about another woman?
Yeah, well, you people know us so well. I forgot the recording.
You had him do a shot at the barber there.
You think it's on television. Yeah. So people can see that Dots is not here, you know. Oh, yeah. See that. Okay. Well, let's...
Hey, Pops, well, you're such a good disc jockey. I think you should sign this off, this record.
Well, I was just going to say, I voiced the opinion of all the All-Stars that although they're not here, they feel the same as we do about Sid.
Sure.
Because they've all have expressed themselves. And they also proved it by sending such a big bass drum full of flowers to his funeral.
I heard about
it. Yeah, they're still talking about it, so that shows we had him at heart.
That's
so we'll just say, God bless Big Sid. And let it go.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. can write in this box.
Well, I've been thinking it's Mop Mop, but it's Bop Bop.
But it was Mop Mop. That's a mistake. Yeah. You know, Miss Britt.
No, no, the deliberateness.
Oh, instead of...
Righteousness.
Instead of Bop, it's whoever, Bop.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Bop.
Well, yeah.
It goes a bit
and not
connected.
Mop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That and Rodify, I
think. How about that? I got you now.
It's cute, isn't it?
Yeah, very cute. That's terrific.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Is it on? Oh, gee.
No.
Listen, Pops, I was just looking in the paper.
What?
In the column, my boy, you know, Herb Cain, I was reading his column of January the 1st. And 1951.
Yeah, boy,
Herb Cain. Yeah, Herb Cain, Baghdad by the Bay.
Yeah.
It says, starts off saying the other world. Pee Wee Russell, the famed jazz clarinetist who is now seriously ill at the San Francisco hospital, cirrhosis and malnutrition, had a couple of distinguished visitors one day last week. Trumpet King Louis, Satchmo Armstrong, and the great trombonist Jackson Teagarden. Pee Wee, who well knows the life of jazz musicians, was deeply touched. Just think, he kept murmuring, these guys got up early to come and see me. It was 2 p.m. That's true.
Well, Pee Wee knows about it. Can't get fingers of it.
Isn't it terrific? Oh.